Today on Seculo, SEC coach Bruce Pearl exposes the growing threat of anti-Semitism on college campuses, and is there another second looming indictment against Donald Trump? We'll talk about all of it today on Seculo.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
We have got a packed show for you today on Seculo. We want to take your calls to 1-800-684-3110. We're going to be joined next segment by Bruce Pearl. He is the coach of the Auburn Tigers basketball team. He is outspoken. And I'd love to see this at a SEC Division I coach who is outspoken against the growing threat of anti-Semitism on college campuses. He's a conservative. He'll say sometimes I don't get into politics, but everybody knows I'm conservative. But on this issue, which is not a political issue at all, it's a human issue. He's been so outspoken, and he was outraged at what he saw last week at that City University of New York School of Law address by the student chosen by her fellow students to give that anti-Israel, anti-Semitic speech. So Bruce Pearl will be joining us live in the next segment of the broadcast. We're also going to be joined by our, senior advisor for foreign policy and national security, Rick Rennell, on the growing threat and aggressive moves by China in the South China Sea. These maneuvers that have become very dangerous. We're going to be joined by Tulsi Gabbard. She participated in one of those Twitter Spaces events yesterday with RFK Jr. and Elon Musk. So we're going to talk to her about that experience and what is going on inside the Democrat Party with a lot of people saying, hey, we need to see a debate, something they haven't had since Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter. We're also going to look into the potential. It looks like we're getting closer to another Trump indictment. Where's the Hunter indictment? What's happening with Joe Biden and that special counsel investigation? I mean, this is, to me, it's when it gets so out of control is that President Trump could be indicted twice before Hunter Biden's even indicted once. So I want to focus time on that as well. So if you got calls on that, 1-800-684-3110, because the news is reporting right now, and of course, they've done this a few times when it was Hunter. But what we know is that Donald Trump's attorneys went into the Department of Justice. Usually that is a sign that the indictment could be imminent. Now, imminent in this day and age can mean next week. It could mean 2 weeks. It could mean also a long delay. And that's because ultimately Merrick Garland is having to make the decisions to okay these moves. Again, this is on the classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. To me, it's one of those cases where I don't think the U.S. Supreme Court would ever want to weigh in on when it comes to classification, because that's not really the crimes. You look at the crimes or the leaking of government documents, and it's not the level of classification of what's leaked. And it's people who leak it either to the media who have access and abuse that access, or it's people who do it for money, or people who do it because they are spies. So there's all those different laws in place. It's different when you're a president or former president and the classification was created for you. I mean, that's the entire classification process is for the commander-in-chief to be able to get information, share it with those who have the right security clearance, but so it doesn't go to people without the right security clearance, and that you can share that information to help make decisions on that information that you're receiving. That's really what the process is for. It's not the after-the-fact, what do you do with it? So again, I think this, to me, if we saw a second indictment by Donald Trump, no movement on Hunter Biden, and no movement by the special counsel investigating Joe Biden's handling of classified documents, and then the other special counsel closing the case on Mike Pence, which I think is the right decision. It wasn't even a slap on the wrist. It was just closed. So there again, they say, you know, having the documents themselves, they didn't see that as a crime. And that was Merrick Garland, the Democrat-controlled DOJ, didn't think they should pursue Mike Pence. But of course, he's not Donald Trump. So we'll take your calls now, 1-800-684-3110. We get back from the break. You know we fight it at the ACLJ. Support our work. Donate today at aclj.org. We are on the front lines of fighting anti-Semitism. We represent clients who are professors at the City University of New York colleges, and we're fighting back. We're glad to be joined by Bruce Pearl, the coach of the Auburn Tigers, joining us next. He's fighting back as well. secular. We have seen a rise in anti-Semitism. And folks, I believe the rise in anti-Semitism we're seeing in the United States is a rise in anti-Semitic and anti-Israel rhetoric that we see from elected officials and in mainstream. They might be lefty, but still pretty mainstream political movements that are stemming a lot of times growing out of our college campuses. In 2022, there were 3,600 anti-Semitic incidents recorded in the U.S. That is a 36% increase from 2021. The group who experiences the most hate crimes in the United States are Jewish people in the United States. That gets overlooked a lot because it's a much smaller minority group, if you will, than some other groups, and it doesn't get as much attention. But a lot of this we know is stemming on our college campuses. We focused in on what was happening. We have clients at Hunter College, which is part of the City University of New York. We saw that horrendous speech the students chose as their student speaker to give at the City University of New York School of Law. And it outraged not just us, but also Coach Bruce Pearl, who coaches the Auburn Tigers basketball team. And Coach Pearl is joining us now. Coach, we appreciate you joining the show and for speaking out.
I'm grateful to be with you, Jordan. Thank you for bringing this subject up.
You know, Coach, let me just go to this first. It feels like a lot of this, the growth of this move of anti-Semitism cloaked in, well, I'm anti-Israel and trying to define these separation or boycott, divestment, and sanctions movements, which many states bar, including the state of New York. But she said that, you know, her school is doing that, so she might have gotten into some legal jeopardy. But the idea is that it's growing on college campuses, and as these young people become adults and enter the adult world, it becomes normal for them to have this anti-Semitic or anti-Israel position. I mean, you're on the college campus, and you feel like as your job as a coach of a program, an SEC program, you're not afraid to speak out. Do you feel it on the college campuses?
I think you feel it and you see it. Now, fortunately, we don't see it and we don't feel it at Auburn University because, you know, we're in a Christian community. And most of the folks in this community actually read their Bible. And, you know, one of the things that I think is creating the growth in anti-Semitism is there aren't enough Jewish folks in Temple. And there are enough people that are going to church and reading their Bible and understanding the history of the Middle East and the history of Judea and Samaria and the history of Israel. Because the things that are being taught and or said are just not completely accurate. And they're spinning a tale. And understand, young people, they want to make a difference. Young people want to, when they hear about apartheid, or when they hear about discrimination, and when they hear about people being oppressed, young people want to do something about it. And I admire them for it. I think it's great. The problem is they're listening to lies. They're listening to complete falsehoods. And, you know, I've been to Israel a dozen times. You want to talk about diversity. You want to talk about diversity of color, of race, of religion, of sexual orientation. It's called intersectionalism. It's about, you know, the have-nots, you know, simply getting everybody on their side, going against the haves. And for some, you know, reason, the Jewish people are perceived to have been to be haves. Well, you know what? If we do have, it's because we worked our butt off to get it. And that's the great thing about this country, is anybody can be anything. You know, Barack Obama was president for two terms in this country. Where else in the world does that happen? And yes, there is absolutely a challenge with racism in this country. We've made progress. We've got a ways to go. Israel has made is an amazing place. Can it get better? Of course it could. But the lies that are being told are obviously twisting the minds of our young people.
Yeah, I mean, these are all human-run governments, so nothing's perfect. You strive to always make things better, and that's the goal. And then when you have an ally like Israel, you work together. And if you have disagreements, usually with an ally, you don't air those disagreements publicly. You don't threaten an ally publicly. And also, the rhetoric back here at home, I want to turn it back home, because it can be dangerous then for Jewish students on college campuses. We're seeing a lot of problems with Jewish professors we represent and Jewish student groups that we represent on campuses at mainstream universities, in places that people may not expect would be as hostile, You said it's grateful that you're at a university that does not have that significant problem on campus, and you're able to speak out. But I wonder how many other individuals like you, Coach Pearl, who have the same feelings, but are scared of speaking out because of what the college might do or what the students might demand. You know, they might demand that you're fired, or might demand that you're removed, or to try to silence you from speaking out on some of these other campuses, even when they know it's the right thing to do. They're too afraid.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And listen, I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth. I'm not into boycotts. And the BDS movement is a terrible, terrible movement in Israel because, quite frankly, it hurts the Palestinian and the Arab population more than it hurts anybody else. The whole concept of saying, okay, we're going to boycott products from Israel, or we're going to boycott from products from Judea and Samaria. The vast majority, look, in Israel, there are 9 million people, 6 million Jews, and 3 million Arabs. Okay, these 3 million Arabs, most of them are employed. More than half of the medical profession, doctors and nurses in the state of Israel, are Arab. That doesn't get published. I mean, you know, your mother always wanted you to grow up and be a doctor. Well, guess what? Most of the doctors in Israel are not Jewish. They're Arab. You talk about, you know, what that diversity brings. You're going to go ahead and boycott and cancel these businesses. Those businesses may close down. They move. And what's going to happen is their employees are going to be out of work. The way to get to peace is peace through prosperity. The way to get to peace is to be like it was before the Oslo Accords, which built walls around different communities. It's when people intermingle, when the races mingle, when the religions mingle. That's how we get to, you know, become better neighbors. Our leaders are obviously, you know, not allowing us to do it. So here back at home, where there are larger Jewish populations, like in New York, or universities on campus where larger Jewish populations, that's where these people that want to say things that are not true about Israel, they're anti-Semitic, but they use it as anti-Zionism, anti-Israel. Oh, we're not anti-Semitic. We're not against Jews. We're just against Israel, and we're against the apartheid state. You know, where would you like us to live? Like, where do we get the world's permission to live? I'm grateful that I'm an American citizen, that my grandfather came over to this country when he was 11 years old and didn't become a citizen until he was 32 years old. It was the greatest day of his life. And I love my country, and I would give my life for my country. I also have a love for my Jewish homeland. And some people just can't quite understand, how could you love both? Well, I do. But where do we have your permission to live? You know how many Jews there are in Lebanon or Egypt or Syria or Iran or Iraq? There are hardly any. Because if we lived there, or how many Jews there are in certain Palestinian villages in Judea and Samaria? None. How many Jews are there in Gaza? None, because it's a death penalty. Yet there are 3 million Arabs in Israel living as citizens.
Yeah, I mean, this is something, too, that I think people forget. And that was not the case 100 years ago. There are a lot of Jews who trace their lineage back, you know, to places like Egypt, places like Lebanon, places like Iran, places like Iraq. That it was not, but post-Holocaust, it's kind of this idea, and I always try to explain it, Coach Pearl, is that you could be a patriotic, proud American Jew, but there's this idea that there's got to be, because of recent history, World War II and the Nazis, there's got to be a place of refuge when needed and necessary. And that's why the world came together and said, you know what, we need to make sure this people group has a place where they control their own security and their own future. And in case of any kind of danger, could welcome in Jews from around the world, as Israel does from Jewish groups from Ethiopia as needed, and other persecuted Jewish groups when needed. They bring in refugees a lot right now, I'm sure, pouring in from Eastern Europe, probably getting a second wave there because of the war with Russia and Ukraine. And so, again, it's been a place of refuge for the Jewish people. But as you pointed out, and it never makes the news, there are more and more Arabs getting involved in the IDF than ever before, that are joining the Israeli Defense Forces, because it's the country they know. It's the country that's provided them the opportunities they've had. And so I'm just so thankful that we have individuals like you, Coach Pearl, because we're used to doing it on the political side, on the legal side. We have an office in Jerusalem. We fight these battles out. But oftentimes it feels like it's very divided, and we need folks who can talk to, who are the basketball coach at a major university, who can talk to different people than I ever get to talk to say, this is wrong. You're so educated on the topic. I mean, we could go on and on, but Coach Pearl, let me just say, thank you for what you're doing by speaking out, for using your social media, for using your voice, for using your platform to speak out. We so appreciate you taking the time to be on the broadcast today.
God bless America, and Am Yisrael Chai.
Thank you. That is Coach Bruce Pearl from the Auburn Tigers. He's the coach of the basketball team there, if you're not a basketball fan. But again, SEC, a major, major program. Maybe now you're going to pay a little more attention to the Auburn Tigers. May have turned me into a Georgia Bulldog, but if basketball comes around, I might have to support the Tigers. We'll be right back. Well, that was exciting. And again, I think, you know, it's great for our audience because, folks, you support the work of the ACLJ. And I want to thank you for taking on the cause of anti-Semitism and broadening out, you know, to understand how serious it is to that we fight back and we stand with Israel, but we also stand with the Jewish people and that it's important because of it's not just the security relationship, but the biblical relationship we have. I mean, there's so many different reasons why. And of course, it's just the decency to stand up against a racism and to stand up against discrimination wherever you see it. And unfortunately, this is a discrimination and racism that gets pushed under the rug. It's the number one most hate crimes occur against Jews right here in the United States. But you would not really think that based off what you see in the news. Again, at the UN, the country most criticized out of the whole world is a country of only 10 million people, like Coach Pearl said, the state of Israel. So, I mean, Will, I think you went to Auburn.
I did.
You're an Auburn Tiger. It is cool that I tried to underscore there, but I just want to get to it for a second for people. It's very cool that he can do that at a major public university, SEC school, and that the school does not get in the way and the students there have not tried to shut him down. I mean, and that says a lot about the community at Auburn, too.
Right. And when you heard what he was speaking about and how well versed he is in the subject as well, it also makes you wonder if there aren't more voices like his that are unafraid to speak up on these university campuses. What you end up having is things that happen like we saw at the City University of New York, where the speakers are not afraid of how radical they have become. In most walks of life in the United States today, if you are that radical, you are immediately canceled, shut down, you are turned away because of racist rhetoric. And many people deserve to be shut down for the things that they are saying. But the one people group that can continually be persecuted, have hate crimes against them, and people are unafraid to speak that at their law school graduation are the hate that is spewed against the Jewish people. And that is absurd. It's a sad commentary on the state of where we are in the United States. But I really appreciate Coach Pearl speaking out, being unafraid. If you look at his Twitter account, it's a lot of basketball and a lot of support Israel and pushback against anti-Semitism.
I think that's great. So check, if you don't know about Coach Pearl, check out his Twitter account. That's the best place to go. Coach Bruce Pearl. And you can see that you'll see a lot of basketball, but in there you'll see a ton of commentary. I would imagine almost every few basketball tweets, you'll see some commentary on Israel, especially when one of these incidents occurs. It's very public. He's not afraid to speak out. And he obviously has the knowledge to speak out as well. And it's great that I'm glad that those college students at Auburn are hearing that. We should lend more, give him more of a platform to be able to do what he does. Now, we've got a lot of news to cover when it comes to Trump right now. And I want to take your calls on this, 1-800-684-3110. As you know, President Trump was indicted by Alvin Bragg, the DA in New York City. That one is looking very weak, right? People said, oh, this kind of. But there's also a special counsel, Jack Smith. It appears, based on the fact that Trump attorneys went to the Department of Justice yesterday, they didn't comment about it, but they were there for a couple of hours. That is usually the final meeting that occurs before an indictment comes or is unsealed, if there already is an indictment. And the Trump team has said basically all they would say, which totally understandable, which is you know, we're going to prepare for as if the indictment is coming. I mean, that's what you have to do as attorneys. You prepare for the worst case scenarios. You don't think, oh, maybe the best case scenario will happen. But here's what I'm kind of having a tough time grappling with, Will, is that we could literally have President Trump indicted by a local DA and a special counsel before any action has been taken on Hunter Biden.
And we know that the investigation into Hunter Biden has gone on for years. It's not a brand new investigation.
No, that was a U.S. attorney that got to, from Trump, David Weiss from Delaware, and he got to continue on because that was part of the, Joe Biden didn't want to look bad by getting rid of him. So he got to continue on. But I always say, like, these guys, it's like, where is he?
Right.
Like, where is the, if you've had all this evidence, it's either so weak that you can't build a case, or you haven't been able to work, and that doesn't seem like the case of just what we've seen publicly, but maybe it's been too difficult. I always want to hear this from Durham. We're still waiting to hear that. Is it just that these guys, when they're dealing with the current Department of Justice, can't get the info they need as investigators to really get the charges brought? I mean, we learned also yesterday, Will, from Comer. He got to finally review that 1023 that alleges Biden took $5 million as vice president. We now have learned that the person who provided that info is a pretty serious person. They have been a confidential source for a decade and have been paid over six figures by the FBI for their information. He was then told, and it's not much more than this, but it is part of an ongoing investigation. We don't know. It doesn't seem like it would be the one on the on classified documents. It could relate to Hunter Biden, and maybe that's why the Hunter Biden investigation has taken so long.
Right, and the fact that the Oversight Committee was able to view this, was able to get information that, according to Comer, is currently being used in that ongoing investigation, it does lead back to the same question that Oversight is concerned about. When you look at the difference in the timelines for both these investigations and how quickly the special counsel is going to potentially indict the former president this week, it's like, oh, okay, what the Oversight Committee is hearing from whistleblowers is real, that they are slow walking. The deep state actors are slow walking investigations into the left,
hiding evidence.
And when it comes to someone on the right, their political enemy, they are very quick to act and potentially indict a former sitting president.
Yeah. I mean, they've already had it at the local DA level. Supposedly the Georgia investigation is expanding. And now, so you might have a former president who, you know, they just hate politically. I mean, they don't hold that back at all. And he's a current candidate for office, the by far leading candidate. We're going to get into the Secular Brothers podcast later today about who did not get a bump after their major announcement for president. And that was interesting. And who's maintained their poll numbers. But so you got the leading Republican candidate. He's already been indicted by the New York DA. Okay, that one is very weak. Who knows what a special counsel is going to bring? I mean, they're bringing a whole force of the Department of Justice against you. Because if it's ultimately Merrick Garland has to okay this. And if these reports are accurate, you could have President Trump dealing with at least two major indictments. I mean, he'd be booked again. You realize now booked federally. And again, the punishment he is receiving for just being, for putting himself out there as someone who could help the United States of America. And he is being punished for it every single day, Will. I mean, it's pretty wild. You look at all these other investigations. Mike Pence's goes nowhere, rightfully so. That shouldn't have then Joe Biden's and Donald Trump's just been closed and we move on and let's just fight this out politically at the election box?
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that we are still talking about many of these subjects shows that when you take on the deep state as president, the deep state is very, very hard to root out, especially in just 4 years. And what you're seeing now is the deep state striking back every chance they get.
Yeah, I mean, we're still waiting to know, and Jim Jordan just got this questioning in. How many FBI officials who were part of the Trump investigations that were phony, bogus, and led to nothing are currently working with Jack Smith, who's about to, it looks like, indict President Trump? I mean, that's what it looks like. It's not a guarantee, but it looks like it's going that way. We'll take your calls on it. How would you react to that? Would it change your support? Or does it kind of double down your support of President Trump? 1-800-684-3110. Give us a call. That's 1-800-684-3110. Thank you. A lot of phone calls coming in. We're going to get to 1-800-684-3110. A packed first half hour of the broadcast with Coach Pearl and speaking on anti-Semitism. Again, let me just kind of update you one more time before we get to our guest. So Rick Rennell, part of our team, both guests today, part of our team, and Tulsi Gabbard. And I think you're going to like both these discussions. We'll talk to Rick, too, some about what's going on with Jim Comey saying that, you know, we talked about yesterday that it's going to be Russia again. And they cannot get over the fact that, I mean, Lord, you'd think Russia has got enough going on right now that that they wouldn't be spending a lot of time and resources since we're funding a major war against them. Trying to elect a president who has said, I will end their war on day one. Isn't that interesting how that's they somehow see that as bad? As saying, well, I will stop the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I will stop the Russian war against Ukraine on day one as president. And that's somehow seen as supporting Russia. I mean, because it, why? Well, we know why. And we could talk to Tulsi Gabbard all day and night about it. It's because they want a full-scale invasion of Russia. Because it's good for the economy. It plays into their neocon kind of take over the world strategy. And that has infected, I mean, it's weird to say neocon because it's infected the left and the right. And I think the left a lot more sometimes than the right. But I do want to take your calls on it as well at 1-800-684-3110. The fact that Donald Trump is it looks like, going to be indicted federally. He's been indicted by New York City. So he's got that indictment, now a federal indictment. There's been no action on Hunter Biden. Mike Pence, they close out the investigation on his classified documents. Joe Biden's, that doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. But again, President Trump, the two tiers of justice. If you're President Trump, you get treated differently. I don't think Mike Pence should have had anything happen to him, but I think the same standards need to apply to everybody. And that means that if it didn't happen to Mike Pence, stop it with that you're trying to catch people on obstruction. These aren't crimes, so don't try to come up with process crimes and shut down the investigation. Let the people decide. Voters get to decide if they trust President Trump to be the next president of the United States to assume that office once again. Republicans will decide if they even want him to be their nominee. And we're going to get into that in the Secular Brothers podcast later today because there's new polling out that shows his support continues to stay very high at 56% inside the Republican Party, and no one else is really climbing. You do have DeSantis in number two, but he didn't get a bump, and we're going to get into the details there. I mean, really statistically, nothing changed since the announcement. In fact, there's some negatives. And again, it's not for me telling you who to vote for. This is just dealing with reality and how the legal system is being used to persecute, literally, persecute the political enemies of Washington, D.C. Because there's too many Democrats and Republicans who love that this is happening to Donald Trump. Now, most of those Republicans, most wouldn't brag about how much they love it. But some do. Some are going to enter this presidential race just to do that. And they think that this is okay to have this two-tiered system of justice, that if you are a Trump supporter, if you're Donald Trump, and you are willing to get rid of the bad actors like Jim Comey, who is just as bad to Hillary Clinton, if not worse to her, actually, probably impacted her more politically when it came to her chances of becoming president and beating Trump because of his reopening of the investigation days before the election, while many people were already early voting, acting as if she had committed yet another crime, and then, in fact, that he closed it right away. And remember how he weighed in on how horrible it was, but it wasn't actually a crime. All of that went against any kind of FBI and Department of Justice policy. He broke all the rules. He gets fired by President Trump, and then people like Hillary Clinton think that, you know, he should get special counsels, which he's got to have many special counsels. So we're going to get into that. We've talked about that. We'll take your calls on it, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to talk to Rick Rennell about a couple things. One, how Comey is trying to push the Russia narrative again, and I want to get Rick's reaction to that as a former acting director of National Intelligence. And then two, the moves by China, these dangerous moves by China. I mean, the military maneuvers now that are involving U.S. warships that are, again, they put you right on the edge of conflict. And they're maneuvers that were unnecessary except to provoke. Support the work of the ACLJ. We're involved in every one of these issues that we talk about. Donate today at ACLJ.org. All right, welcome back to Secul. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We've talked a lot of issues already, anti-Semitism on the college campuses, the idea that another indictment could be looming of President Trump, this time from a special counsel. We'll see if it actually happens. I mean, it looks like on track, like it's likely to happen, but you never want to say it's 100%. It never is 100% until it actually happens. That's because the top leaders of the Department of Justice have to okay it. We've also seen some really dangerous moves by China involving not just allies, not like just involving Taiwan, but involving our own warships and U.S. warships. I want to go to our senior advisor for national security and foreign policy. He's the former acting director of national intelligence, been a U.S. ambassador to Germany, spent 10 years at the United Nations, Rick Rennell. Because, Rick, you've been involved in all these kind of issues. The growing aggressiveness, not just vocally or by verbal actions by China, or even some of the moves they've made to ally with some U.S. adversaries. But now we're starting to see aggressive moves taken involving, and they're unnecessary. It wasn't like an emergency maneuver that was necessary. It was totally unnecessary maneuver that involved a U.S. warship. This is when things get very dangerous very quickly.
Yeah, look, I think that this has been a slow burn for a while from the Chinese. We've seen the Chinese feel emboldened. They were trying to really manipulate the situation under the Trump administration, but they've been unleashed during the Biden administration. There's no pushback. Remember, too, that there's a big concern in the diplomatic community because instead of confronting China, we've heard from the Biden administration, Joe Biden himself, Anthony Blinken, and others, apologies about some of the Chinese actions. Certainly, they've blamed Russia for Hunter Biden's laptop, filled with all sorts of concerns about connections to the Chinese communists. And so I think that there's a growing sense that the Biden team hasn't been able to blunt them because they've been afraid of the connection between the Biden family and communist China maybe being blackballed or coerced by the Chinese somehow to hold leverage over the Biden family. So there's been a big concern that the Biden administration is not pushing back. What I am mostly concerned about is the just sheer willingness of the Chinese to engage with our local politicians, to interfere wherever they can without any fear of pushback. And so it's getting worse, and we need Congress to step in and realize that without a blunt force from the Biden administration calling out these actions from China, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, I mean, when they do speak out, it's just kind of, it won't be long before somebody gets hurt. I mean, I get that that's an idea and it's an unsafe maneuver, but it's not a very strong condemnation. It's not like, don't do this again or else. Or if we start seeing more moves like this, we're going to take more serious action. We're going to be in a more aggressive posture. And I'd like to see, we were talking at the beginning how it's not just the verbal conflict. This is now getting to actual maneuvers. But I would like to see some of our rhetoric escalate a bit. I mean, like a little bit tougher talk. I think Americans would like to see a little bit more tough talk coming out of our own officials when it comes to China, specifically when they are taunting us. We saw how Iran would do this with the fast boats in the Persian Gulf, and again, and at one point even boarding a U.S. vessel. Remember taking those Navy men and women into Iranian custody. I mean, so we've seen this action from adversaries before, and we've seen Rick that if you don't respond aggressively, we could see. I could imagine a similar scenario occurring here. China might be less inclined to do something that bold, but it certainly feels like they're moving that way, where if there was a smaller vessel and U.S. troops were there and they could commandeer it, that they might do so just to show that they could.
Look, it's called escalation, and we have to stop this escalation because they're feeling like they're able to do it for free. Remember, too, that the Biden team spent an awful lot of time mocking the tough Trump policies on China, whether it's tariffs or the rhetoric. And yet we've seen the Biden team has not changed the Trump policies very much when it comes to China. There is an internal recognition from the Biden team that the Trump policies, the tough policies of tariffs, worked and are working. So they haven't really backed away from what Donald Trump started. And to me, that's an admission that they realize it worked. They realize that they can't walk it back. Despite their rhetoric that Trump was too tough, the Biden team has not changed the policy.
I want to shift topics a little bit because we got Jim Comey, of course, rearing back into the political sphere to say that, you know, there's no one, literally, he doesn't even have a Republican he would choose. It's only, he said, Joe Biden can be elected president, which is always nice to hear from former FBI director weighing in yet again on politics. But he had this to say again about Russia. I want to play it from, it was Jen Psaki interviewing him, so interesting enough right there, but bite four.
Given his affinity for Putin and his outlook on the war, do you expect, or should we expect, Russia to interfere on his behalf in 2024 if he's the nominee?
Yes, of course. I mean, Vladimir Putin does not want Joe Biden to be president of the United States for reasons that I hope the American people see, because he acts in our national interest. He would very much like Donald Trump to be president again, because Donald Trump is, for reasons I still can't explain, very, very fond of Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, he can't explain because he tried to accuse Donald Trump of being a Russian agent, Rick, and of course that was not true, so he can't explain that. But Rick, he's also missing the point. I heard from Donald Trump that he's claiming that, you know, he will take the time from transition, so if he was elected president, to the day he takes the oath of office again, and one of his major priorities would be ending the war in Ukraine on day one of his presidency. How does that benefit Vladimir Putin?
Look, let's be very clear. The Trump administration had sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, the Russian pipeline. It was the Biden team that removed those sanctions. It was Senate Democrats that removed those sanctions. And that precipitated a war in Ukraine. It signaled weakness. It showed Vladimir Putin that he could do what he did under the Obama-Biden presidency and go back into Ukraine. There wasn't a war in Europe or in Ukraine under Donald Trump. You know, Comey is being ridiculous. He's being partisan. He has a hatred for Donald Trump because Donald Trump fired him and embarrassed him. And so he's never going to stop. But the idea that somehow a war happened by Vladimir Putin under Obama and under Biden shows you just how weak the Biden administration is, the Obama administration was, and how the calculation from Putin plays out.
You know, Rick, as always, we appreciate your insight. Next time I have you, I want to talk to you more about this kind of the weaponization, the continued weaponization of the legal system. It appears to be on President Trump. It's like doing using everything they can in their power to try and thwart even him, I guess, you know, getting through the Republican nomination. And that should be up to Republican voters. I mean, not the D.C. swamp and the Biden team. But again, they use every legal apparatus possible. They get their friends and colleagues like Jim Comey to go out there and start spreading more bad information. Again, at least admitting now he doesn't know why, because he accused. But I remember when he was accusing President Trump of being a Russian asset. I guess he's forgot that because that's embarrassing to Jim Comey, and he gets very embarrassed and very upset. He's again, but he has been lionized, you know, by the left, and now is, I guess, 100% behind Joe Biden. So, Rick, as always, we appreciate your insight. I know, where in the world is Rick right now? I think today he was joining us from Bogota, Colombia. I won't put him on the spot about that yet. Maybe when he's back, he can let us know what he was up to there. But he is, again, always got great insight. Now, coming up, I think very interesting insights. One of the reasons I wanted to bring Tulsi onto our broadcast team is because during these election seasons, especially, you know, a lot of us are stuck in the Republican world, and we can work through all of the processes there, but we haven't been so involved in like the Democrat Party world. And they're experiencing a potential shakeup like we haven't seen since Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter. And people like Elon Musk are weighing in there. She participated in one of those Twitter spaces yesterday with RFK Jr., Tulsi did, and Elon Musk. So I want to talk to her about that and about what is going on inside the Democrat Party that really kicked her out, that made it impossible for her to remain in the party. So you definitely want to tune in, and we want to get you updated and educated on all these issues. Support the work of the ACLJ. Donate today at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. We'll be right back with Tulsi Gabbard. Secular, we're joined by our senior analyst for political and military affairs, Tulsi Gabbard. And Tulsi, very cool. You participated yesterday in one of those Twitter spaces that Elon Musk has been hosting and offering to host for any of the presidential candidates who are running. It started with Ron DeSantis. There were a lot of conservatives tuned in, a lot of Republicans tuned in about a week and a half ago. I think it got 3 or 4 million views. I mean, it builds up views too over time. And he had RFK Jr. on yesterday, and David Sachs hosted, but you were participating as well. And I wanted to give you kind of an opportunity for people who maybe didn't know about it yet. I think they should. A lot of our audience has been listening more and more to what RFK Jr.'s had to say, and certainly has been tuning into his ideas and kind of how he's been talking about things like the border and things like U.S. sovereignty and not demonizing each other for having different political views. But what was it like kind of participating in this this very new venture from Elon Musk, this Twitter Spaces, which I think they go on for a little bit of like a couple of hours. So what was that like?
It was about 2 hours long. You know, Jordan, what's interesting is these platforms are becoming increasingly important because there is such a vacuum of information in the mainstream media. And this is one of the big problems as we look to this next election, but it's also just in general a big problem that we're facing across the country and around the world is if we, the people, exist in a vacuum of information, if we don't know what's really going on, then we are not equipped to be, we can't make decisions because we don't have information. And so when you see the mainstream media, especially as we look at this election, depriving voters from information, in this case, in the Democratic primary, almost pretending in many ways like there's not even a primary and that there's no opposition to President Joe Biden, they are depriving voters with their right to be able to make that informed decision. So when you look to what Elon Musk is doing, and you know, he and David Sachs, as you mentioned, hosted one with Ron DeSantis. And I think at some point they said, look, we'd welcome all candidates, regardless of political party, to come on and take advantage of that platform and have a real conversation. And that's exactly what it was. It was a real conversation. It wasn't just like some canned speech, written talking point. There was a lot of back and forth between Bobby Kennedy and the hosts. I and a number of other people were invited to come on and to ask some questions. And you could tell for those who are listening, it was almost as though you were sitting in the room and listening to this conversation that covered a whole host of different topics. And this is exactly the kind of thing that we need more of as we head very quickly into this next election. Because there are very clear differences. When you listen to what Bobby Kennedy is talking about on many different issues, from domestic to foreign policy, he holds positions that in some cases are in stark contrast to President Joe Biden. He has a lot of strong beliefs on different issues. You know, he mentioned yesterday that he would seal the border immediately and take the necessary actions to do that. Talked about a lot of different issues, but these are the kinds of things that voters cannot see side by side because the DNC has decided they will not allow debates, very arrogantly and offensively dismissing voters' intelligence and right to be able to make that informed decision. And so hopefully there will be more and more platforms like this, again, just so people can recognize, hey, this election is not a foregone conclusion. The outcome of these elections lies in the hands of we the people, the voters. Politicians forget that sometimes, but we cannot forget that. If we want to see change in this country, and we need to see change in this country, we need to seek out that information and make sure that we are making the best decision for us, our communities, our families, the American people in our country.
Yeah, I mean, we know, even from our own audience, more and more people are less inclined to want to say that I'm just a Republican or I'm just a Democrat, and that they can just fully identify. And some of that is just because of what they pay so much more close attention to how Washington operates. They realize it's more like Washington versus all of the rest of us, and the rest of us trying to get good things done for the country. And I always thought when he said that about the border, and he just made it clear, he's like, you can totally support having a very secure border. You're not a racist. You're not xenophobic. There's nothing wrong with you as an American or as a person to want to have that secure border. And here's why. And it's kind of like, okay, well, yeah, we've been trying to say this too, but he can at least talk to an audience that I might not be able to talk to, like how you could talk to an audience I'm not always able to reach as well. But inside the DNC, I mean, we've seen how they've treated people like you inside the Democrat Party, who could have been a strength, who were a strength for their party, to show diversity within the party, to show youth within the party, your military service. I mean, the list goes on and on. But yet, again, you challenged any of their kind of structures, and you're kind of on the way out. They push you out. Is there a way, a sense, and you'd probably know better than I would inside, that you could, that someone like an RFK, if he keeps pulling at these numbers or even goes higher, gets more support and resources, could almost force the debate? I mean, is that a potential, or do we just give up on these kind of old institutions and move forward to like Twitter Spaces and other places to have the conversation?
I think that if the DNC continues to block, continues to reject reality that there actually is a Democratic primary, then I expect that voters will look I hope that voters will look to other places to get information, to recognize that there is in fact a primary. There are clear choices in contrast here between the different candidates who are running against President Biden, and make an informed decision. To be clear, I'm not on the way out of the Democratic Party. I left the Democratic Party last fall specifically because of, you know, the insane elitist cabal of warmongers, their divisive tactics and racializing everything, tearing our country apart, undermining our fundamental freedoms, and because of policies like their open border policy. They don't care about the safety, security, and freedom of the American people. That's really what it comes down to. I see a lot of what Bobby Kennedy is talking about is he is also speaking to these same obvious observations about how crazy it is to have Vice President Kamala Harris, our Secretary of Homeland Security, and others in the Biden administration saying, we have secure borders, when it is very clear that they are not. They are not secure. And so just being able to have access and exposure to candidates like Bobby Kennedy to recognize that there is information to be had, and there is an election that will occur. Whether the DNC changes their position or not remains to be seen. I would be shocked. I would be shocked if they did. But I encourage other organizations, other platforms to welcome different presidential candidates, because I can tell you from my standpoint, I certainly would switch off the mainstream media channel and go and seek out those interesting conversations like we had yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I remember for a time, and I think you were one of the rare folks in Congress who weren't like bound by this, but it would be very difficult for us, even if we kind of said, hey, we want to talk about this issue with this Democrat on, we're not going to try to hit you on all this, some things we don't agree with. And it was like always a no. And it would sometimes, you know, the staff would be like, listen, it's not us. We just can't do it because of the party. And
yeah,
now there's other places
to
go.
To
yeah. Yeah, now there's other places to go and places to be. And we appreciate Tulsi for all your insight. Keep us updated. I think, again, that's what people want to see, is these conversations. We're trying to provide them for you, too, here on the Secular Broadcast. Check it out. Share it with your friends and family. We'll talk to you tomorrow.